everybody. Welcome to Stoppage Time, presented by Buffalo Wild Wings. I'm Jimmy Vance. I'm with Jason Longshore and Mike Conti of the Lane United Radio Broadcast Team. Big win, guys, this past weekend.
We made it back alive.
And before we get to the show, just want a big thanks to our new sponsor, Buffalo Wild Wings. Head to your nearest Buffalo Wild Wings for the B-Dubs Fast Break Lunch Menu with great low price items starting at $5.99. Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports, guys. Big shout out to them. Thank you so much.
When are we going to have a Buffalo Wild Wings lunch?
I know. It should be soon. That's what I've been told.
Okay.
So now you don't want to have the Conti lunch at Buffalo Wild Wings because that's fried pickles and beer. I don't know if we could come back to work. It's a great lunch, but you got to work tonight. You got a Tuesday.
Yeah, I can't do it. I can't do that today.
I got to work this afternoon, so not today, but hopefully sometime
soon. But guys, I mean, massive 3 points on the road. Great performance, especially the first half. Going up against it, you know, Orlando was on a 6-game winning streak. You know, we lost midweek on the Sporting Kansas City with that, you know, red card, and, you know, played well in the second half. But going into this one, we didn't know really what to expect from the guys from with three games in 8 days. But, man, what a performance. And, boy, you saw it from Orlando from the start. They were pressing, and they were on edge the whole game, guys. What'd y'all's first reaction from as you guys digested the game?
If you were watching this match in black and white, didn't know who was who, you would think Atlanta United was the team on the winning streak. Mm-hmm. Because they looked in complete control of the match from day one. I mean, they looked like they were comfortable, composed. Orlando looked like the team that was desperate, and they came in on a 6-game winning streak. The reaction was just shocking for me from Orlando, because this is a team that should be playing with some confidence, should have, you know, some good momentum coming into this, and it just really early in the match they felt like they were on edge. It blew me away, and it just kept getting worse as the night went on for them.
I got to be so careful because this could make it out on the internets and go viral, and then Orlando fans are going to start sending me hate mail. It kind of felt a little bit like, you know, big brother and little brother playing. Big brother's beaten you like two times out of, well, I guess once out of three, you've tied the other two. But, you know, you're putting so much emotional energy because now you've got big brother coming into your park. You're on the 6-match winning streak. This is the time you're going to get him. And I think they put a lot of emotional energy into this match, also knowing that Guzan was out and Atlanta United had to play Wednesday. So all the ingredients were there for Orlando City to get 3 points out of that, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you saw within the first couple minutes, when Atlanta United came out fresh, I think they played their best first half of the season, to be totally honest with you.
Yeah.
When Atlanta United came out, kind of put Orlando back on their heels a little bit, and then they draw the penalty in the 10th minute, which was the correct call, by the way, I think you kind of got that, oh crap, reaction from Orlando, and instead of I guess using that energy productively, they started sniping at each other. And that was the big alarm bell to me when it comes to the Lions, is, you know, that's not really a sign of mental toughness. I will give them credit in the second half. I mean, they certainly made it a very interesting match.
Mm-hmm.
The goal by Miram, that was very good build-up. A little bit of a bad rebound given up by Can, but it's still a good goal, a legitimate goal. And then really in the last 5-6 minutes before Will Johnson's theatrics, Atlanta United was kind of on the ropes. So I'll give Orlando City at least credit for getting back into the match that way. But I think there are some real questions now about, you know, is Jason Christ the right guy to be leading them? Is Kleshton the right guy to be wearing the armband for them right now? You know, maybe it's Spectre and he's hurt.
I think it has to be.
You know, they'll be better when Spectre comes back and when Sutter comes back. It will not be easy beating these guys twice more this year. But I think it was one of those things where Orlando City, and certainly their fans, really thought this was going to be it. This is going to be the time. Atlanta United is their bogey team. They probably thought this is finally the time we're going to get them. And it became apparent within 5 minutes that it was not going to be their night.
Before we get into the boat show with an incredible goal from him, but like starting basically the first half, boy, Orlando, they were lucky that thing wasn't 4-0 at halftime. Mm-hmm. With the number of chances that, you know, were going our way, that we just, that final pass, it just wasn't there. Right. You know, we're just split second off on a couple things. But, I mean, that first half performance, Jason, like Conti was saying, that best of the season?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think if you're being nitpicky, Atlanta should have put it away in the first half, should have scored a third. Yeah. I think if you get a third in that, there's no chance for Orlando to come back, and maybe you don't get some of the drama in the second half that we had, but that's really it. I mean, 8 shots, 4 on target for Atlanta in this match. You get 2. That's pretty efficient going forward. Maybe looking for the final pass, the extra pass a little too often, but that's the way they play in the 3-5-2. You know, you don't have as many numbers forward. It is down to the individual interactions between Martinez, Almiron, Barco, Nagby when he jumps forward. And it's down to them all being in sync. And it's very, you know, free-flowing, very fluid. And when it's on, it's brilliant. When it's off, you don't get the chance. You don't get the shot at the end of it. So that's the trade-off right now. You know, they're playing this well with this style. It's working. It's very secure in the back with 3 center backs. If you can still generate enough offense to go forward and win matches and you're more secure in the back, it makes a lot of sense right now, and it just keeps working.
And they continue to defend so well. I mean, here again, and I think LGP deserves a lot of credit for this, Dom Dwyer absent, you know, invisible at times in this match. So Dwyer, Piatti, Zlatan. I mean, we can go down the list the last month of the players that really scare you on the opponent, the attacking players, and how Atlanta United has just cuffed them. Mm-hmm. And I think LGP has a big role in that. I think Parkhurst and LGP could both easily be in the All-Star game in August, easily. Parkhurst is having a best 11 type season. So as long as they continue to defend this well, everything else takes care of itself, doesn't it? You gave up 2 goals to Sporting Kansas City because you're playing down a man. Okay, and the second goal they scored, everyone's up, and you know that's just going to happen. That to me is the story of Atlanta United in 2018. It's not Barco, it's not Martinez and his 8 goals, it's not Almiron, who might be the best player in the league right now. It's that Atlanta United is defending as well as they are.
Yeah, and let's go into the Boat Show here. Did the Twitter poll. Mm-hmm. People, it was a tight one, and the Boat Show won by like 1%. We had a bunch of good options there. Nice. But and everybody, make sure you send in your Facebook questions here. We're going to be answering those a little bit later in the show. Again, this is Stoppage Time. I'm Jimmy Vance of Jason Longshore and Mike Conti of the Atlanta United Radio Broadcast Team. And that Barco second goal, man, first time on the other side of his boot. Wait, what a goal, and what a big time to have it go up 2-0 in a big matchup against our rivals.
That was the whole build-up, too. I mean, it started with a ball from Almiron at midfield that split defenders to send Barco in. Barco lays it off to Garza, and instead of just charging in, Barco hangs back at the top of the box, because we see this all the time from Atlanta United. They, instead of just crossing flat across the box, they look for that cutback, and it's more of a pass than a cross. And that's what this was. And Barco's there with the outside of the right foot. It's such a difficult shot. You know, I mean, if you're looking, it's pretty simple when you think about these things. A lot of players are going to take that with the inside of their foot. So they're going to take it with all of that. You have a lot of margin for error. Barco took it, it's my left foot, but Barco took it with right here. You have to hit it just right. You just don't have as much surface area on the ball. It's just that simple. It's physics. And Barco hit it perfect first time. It was just instinct for him. And that's Ezequiel Barco. You know, I was watching a lot of Independiente's, like, legend, Ricardo Bochini. He is the face of Independiente. And he's a player and still like an ambassador for the club. His career ended in 92. And he was really in Ezequiel's ear as the whole transfer saga was playing out. And he said, you should take this opportunity. You know, it's a great opportunity for you to be secure financially for the rest of your life. And, you know, you can't guarantee that here. If you have this opportunity, you should go. And I believe that he might have advised him to actually hold out and get the deal done. But when you look at him as a player and you look at Barco as a player, they have a lot of similarities, because Barco is not fast like Almiron. He's fast, but he's not that fast. He's not, you know, strong and powerful like Joseph. He's just gifted with the ball. He sees things before they develop. There's something that Bochini was known for. It's called la pausa. It's the pause. And it's when you see a situation where, and I've seen Barco do it a couple times now, when it's almost like he slows down, either puts a foot on the ball or just stops and lets everything go around him. And then he either picks out a pass, or the shot in Chicago was kind of that, where he took that just little bit of a hesitation, the goalkeeper cheats one way, puts it up over his shoulder. That it's not a skill you can really teach. It's something you kind of have. And Barco has it. And you see it from watching a player like Bochini, who is that legend at the club that Barco came from. He is, I mean, that's what a lot of people said, is he's the new Bochini. And that's a, I mean, that's a huge honor to be considered that way. And when you watch the two of them play, there's actually a ton of similarities, because Bochini was the same way. Not super fast, didn't have a powerful shot, you know, just gifted in the way he saw the game. Kind of an old school point guard. You know, a pass-first point guard that's just old school, and they saw the game. And they're going to get their points because they see the game so well, but they're not going to be a leading scorer. Bochini never went to Europe. He played 5 minutes in the World Cup. He was just always on the edge of that. But for Independiente, he won, I want to say, like 10 or 11 trophies, intercontinental titles. He scored a ridiculous goal against Juventus, won a ton of league titles for them, and when you watch the two of them, you can see where Barco gets some of it from coming up in that system. And it's just fascinating to see. I love digging into that type of stuff and trying to figure out, okay, why is Barco the way he is? Mm-hmm. I think that's a big part of it. You know, he's just, he just sees things that we don't.
Yeah, I mean, and I can't add to that. I mean, that's incredible analysis.
But, yeah, but Barco being, coming in with a $15 million price tag, you know, some, you know, 18, 19-year-olds, you know, it might be a lot of pressure on him, but he is, from last year, we saw him in the tournament down there, scoring the winning penalty, you know, and now he has stepped up in almost like his biggest match so far this season, away from home, and scored an amazing goal that basically won us the game.
Really, from the first time we saw him, and he was inserted in a very high-pressure situation in a very high-pressure match against New York City, he has delivered. I mean, as Jason has pointed out repeatedly, I mean, the service is perfect. Balls are perfectly weighted. They're exactly where they need to be. Has an outstanding feel for the match. I think some people nationally who haven't watched him closely have gotten a little too wrapped up in the fact that he only had one goal in his first four matches. He's not here to score goals. I mean, Jason can testify to this because we were, in the Uber going back from the match in Chicago, and one of the talking
heads.
That
was the first thing that came up.
Right.
We actually hadn't even gotten to the Uber yet. We're standing there waiting on the Uber, and we pull up one of the conversations. I think it was MLSsoccer.com, and they're talking about the wrap of the night's action. And the first thing they go into is, okay, Barco scores his first goal. Are we going to, you know, now he going to live up to it? Going to live up to the hype?
Yeah, and that's just silly. I mean, he's not, his job is not to score 15, 16 goals a year. I mean, it'd be great if he did, and he probably will at some point.
He could.
But that's not his job.
Right.
You know, and I think sometimes people who don't watch all of it get a little bit too wrapped up in the statistics, and they don't really quite get it. I think the missing piece of credit on the Barco goal, really on the Martinez penalty as well, was Greg Garza.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Garza drawing the penalty in the 10th minute. I mean, when you're pushed down by the throat in the penalty area, that is a penalty kick.
Yeah.
100 times out of 100. I have no idea still why even Jason Christ would bring that up post-match and say, well, he went down too easily. He got pushed in the throat in the penalty area. It doesn't matter if he went down easily or if he, you know, tried to stand up. It's a foul in the box. It's a penalty.
If he'd been on his feet, it still should have been a penalty.
Absolutely,
I don't care that he went down.
You can't put your hands on a guy's face or throat.
Yeah.
You just can't.
I mean, there was no reason for it. Garza was backing out of the penalty box to probably...
That's the other thing.
No reason for it.
I mean, just an awful, awful... Again, mental toughness, I think, is a question with Orlando right now. But then he had the assist on the Barco goal. And Jason's right. It started with Almiron coming down the middle. Mm-hmm. But I think Garza had a really, really strong match, heavy workload, and that heat and humidity, not really heat, but humidity and the mugginess. Outstanding job. And Barco probably owes him an adult beverage for that assist.
But Barco can't buy it, so.
Yeah. He can't, yeah, but I'm sure he can get a surrogate to probably, you know, get him like a Total Wine gift card or something. Or a Buffalo Wild Wing gift card. There, and then he can go and get a frosty cold beer at Buffalo Wild Wing where the beer is cold and the TVs are always on.
It's just, I like it.
And the pickles are fried.
Nice.
See?
I like that. That's good. Now let's transfer it to defense now with Miles Robinson getting a surprise start for Atlanta United. And man, at the beginning of the year, I can't even anybody think of, thought of that Miles Robinson could possibly start at Orlando, you know, and what a performance from him. Like, you know, for a guy from the starting out with a ATL U2D2, you know, got some matches under his belt there. Came on for LAFC, performed well. Now come back. Now played again. Vital importance to this match, along with Parker's and LGP. That the defense was just great this game.
I mean, are we still going to complain about Miles Robinson's development? Are we still going to say that Atlanta United's not developing young talent? Robinson he looked like he fit from the opening whistle. And against LAFC, it was a little dodgier at the beginning, and he kind of grew into that match. This one, he was fine. I'm not going to fault him on the goal. I feel like Can probably should have handled that a little bit better, either punched it over the goal or further wide. It's a tough spot for Robinson, but he responded to that well. He looked really good in possession, didn't look shaky at all. And this back line, when you can have Parkhurst is playing at a level for me that if you had center back issues and the U.S. was going to the World Cup, you would be considering taking Michael Parkhurst to the World Cup. He's playing that well. Gonzalez Pires is playing well enough that he should be opening up a lot of eyes for clubs in Europe who are interested in center backs because he is that good right now. And you have Miles Robinson, who's on the way up, a young player who is getting better every match. And you still have Franco Escobar, and you still have Chris McCann, who can slot into things. So,
well, unfortunately, their confidence in Robinson, and it's well-placed confidence, he's earned it, but it's allowed them to not rush Escobar back or McCann back. McCann dealing with a kind of a soft tissue injury. You don't want to rush him back if you can help that. And it's given them confidence to go back to the 3-5-2.
Yeah.
I mean, quite frankly, if they felt like Miles Robinson wasn't up for it, they're probably in a 4-2-3-1 in Orlando.
Yep.
Instead, they go to the 3-5-2, which they have not lost in all year. And they had no problem starting Miles Robinson there. I would suspect that's very possibly the same lineup that we'll see Sunday against Red Bulls. Because reportedly, McCann was running off to the side today, not training, and Escobar was not training. So, you know, Jason will get into the whiteboard in a little bit. We'll talk about it. But I think Robinson is absolutely someone that can be relied upon now. And here again, we go back to the conversation we've had for weeks. Thank God for ATL UTD2. Because that early seasoning that he was able to get with the second team, that's not a resource you had last year. Right. You have it now. It's been very, very key.
Mm-hmm. And now I kind of wanted to go to this little debate that I know we had after the Minnesota United match do you guys think this match against Orlando was our most impressive road match as a team?
Impressive? I still would probably put Minnesota up there just because of the situation.
The 10 men.
Yeah, not it wasn't a beautiful game. If I get to choose, you know, impressive for me, I want, you know, a 4-0 dominating, free-flowing attacking game.
Okay.
But I was probably most impressed by the Minnesota match because you go up there, you're playing in tough conditions. You lose LGP early. You're playing McCann at center back, which we hadn't seen at that point. It was all hands on deck. Wheeler Aminu comes in there and does well. Zizo came in and did well. You get the goal and you make it stand up. And, you know, that was probably the toughest ask they've had this season. Orlando should have been a tougher ask, but I almost feel like Orlando defeated themselves before they even stepped on the field. They were so jacked up for this match, and they couldn't handle it.
Easily the most impressive half they've played on the road.
Yes.
In the first half, without question. I mean, but Atlanta United really hasn't dominated anyone on the road this year, quite frankly. I mean, they were in a 2-0 game at LA Galaxy, but really was a one-goal game the whole way until the penalty at the
end. Another one where they should have put it away earlier.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, honestly, if you're asking me the most impressive road match they've played this year, it probably for me, it would be that one, mm-hmm. LA Galaxy, because even when it was 1-0 for however many minutes, 70-some, you never felt like Atlanta United was losing that match.
Yeah.
I think as far as grittiness and quality of effort, probably Minnesota, because playing down a man for 60 minutes. But we still haven't really seen Atlanta United dominate yet for 75, 80 minutes on the road. We just haven't seen that yet. They will have opportunities coming up, by the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, New England's coming.
It's a tricky one.
It's tricky, but it's coming. Mm-hmm. You have a very tough match in New York City. But yeah. Then after that, if you look ahead...
Columbus.
Columbus. I forgot about that.
Columbus
now
is
1-2
legit.
In the East all of a sudden.
Yeah, Columbus is legit.
Yeah. Okay, I take that comment back. There will be no easy road matches until after July 4th when we're up in Philadelphia. And even that might not be easy.
But there's some that they have to prove what they're made of.
Right.
And that's what it is. I mean, Columbus is a top-tier team in the East. I'm ready to put them in that. New England, I don't know yet. I can't figure New England out.
New England kind of reminds me a little bit of Orlando in that they've had some semi-good results, mm-hmm. but they haven't had that jaw-dropping, wow, I can't believe they did that result.
I think with New England, it's more the way they play that I can't get a good read on. They're kind of like, I don't even know what to compare them to because they just make the game chaotic.
Right.
It's not exactly a high press. It's mm-hmm. not quite that. It's just chaos, and they thrive in the chaos, and they do really well with it. They're good players in 1v1 situations. I wonder how they're going to handle a team like Atlanta that is very composed and doesn't generally lend itself to chaos.
And this goes back to a point that we made with Doug Robertson after the game. I really believe, truly, right now, 1 through 14 or 15, Atlanta United's the most talented side in MLS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yes.
Even more than Toronto. I really, really believe that if you take Atlanta United's 15 best players and put them up against the 15 best players on any of the other clubs in MLS, Atlanta United's got the most talent right now. They're also pretty much 100% healthy, okay? That's a big part of it.
The only caveat I would have to that is if you take them out of their system and you just take player versus player, maybe Toronto wins that, maybe not.
Yeah.
But for fitting the system and getting the most out of them in the current system, I think Atlanta has the roster that they wanted to build.
Yeah, Toronto absolutely
have.
Toronto would be the only other team in discussion.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, obviously, Javinko, Mavinga, Altidore, Bradley.
Yeah,
I mean,
when you
no
go
question
a step
about
lower, like, you know, when you look at those center backs with Haglund, Zavaleta, Mavinga, Drew Moore, you have four solid center backs.
Right.
That's what's so crazy about Toronto right now is all of them got hurt at the same time. You just never see that.
Excuse me.
Bless you. When you get into a situation like Atlanta where you've been able to stay healthy and you've been able to find the kind of role players that fit, that are the right fit, and you have young emerging guys coming up like a Miles Robinson, you're really set. Because,
yeah.
You know, unless everybody in the same position gets hurt, you can handle this. And now you have two different ways to play that are very different and very different personnel, and it works.
Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is with Atlanta United where they are right now, going on the road to any building other than Toronto, and I include New York City in this, you feel like you should be able to get a result.
Yeah, I worry about NYC more than Toronto just because of the field being so different.
Right, yes.
Yeah, that's the
only
reason.
That's
a
truly home
field
advantage.
Yeah,
and that would have nothing to do with Atlanta United.
Right.
But I still feel like when we're up there on June the 7th, Atlanta United should be able to get a result.
Well, now
I think they're that good right
now. You can sit and absorb pressure.
Yes.
And that was the thing is last year you didn't have that. You didn't have that ability to sit and absorb pressure as comfortably on the road. You know, the games felt like they were more on an edge. You were worried more on the road. This year, second half of Orlando is a prime example. You know, you decided to sit back. You went through three games in a week. The legs were getting heavy, as some of the guys said afterwards. They felt composed. They felt comfortable doing that. Last year, they would not have.
I mean, four wins on the road already this year. Mm-hmm. We had four wins total last year.
Well, they were getting draws on the road last year. That's the difference between last year and now. Last year, they were rescuing draws.
Mm-hmm.
This year, they're going up and holding on for wins.
Yeah.
I think that's the big difference. It's still a really small sample size, though. I mean, that's the thing. We got to remember, there's still 11 more road matches to go.
It's you know, Chicago on the road. Chicago, who knows where they're going to end up. You know, it's Galaxy on the road, and the Galaxy are...
They're bad plummeting
team.
Right now.
They're a bad team right now. It's funny. He signs Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Orlando on the road.
Yeah. Honestly, I think we're going to look back at that win at Loons and say, you know what? That was a pretty darn good road win.
Maybe.
Considering the question. I think they're a playoff team.
In the West.
They're absolutely in the knockout round. They're probably on the road in the knockout round. But I think they are a playoff team right now. We'll probably look back on it. Now, you get a win at Dallas, that's a great win if that happens. If you get a win at, you know, a lot of people have been pointing to that TFC match. It might all be wrapped up by then.
That might not matter.
That might not even matter. But you go up to Red Bulls, you get a win in late September, you can say, all right, that's a really good win. Orlando City, that's a really good win. That is a playoff team in the East, as long as they stop fighting
they
with each
be.
Other. Yeah. That is a playoff team in the East. So, anyhow,
but,
small sample, but early signs are encouraging.
Before we get into Orlando City and the Will Johnson meltdown, I want to give a big shout out to the 17s that are in Orlando. That if you're listening on TV, but also if you haven't checked out the full time report on 99thegame.com or subscribe to Off the Woodwork on iTunes, we have it there. You guys did the post game, and y'all did a really cool moment. Like 5 minutes in, that you know that the 17s were singing their lungs out, and like you guys just stopped what you're doing and just put the mic out there.
And you know what was really funny? When I came back on Tuesday, Jimmy was like, "Wow, so did they realize where you were sitting, and did they come over to your booth and start singing at you?" No, they were on the other side of the park. I mean, they probably didn't even know we were there. That's how loud they were. I mean, it was incredible.
It was a really cool, incredible moment on just listening to it live. And I know. I've heard so many people on Twitter, and people were big shout outs to you guys for, you know, capturing that moment, you know, rather than just going with the show. But I mean, you couldn't because they were so loud, basically. But big shout out to them. If you haven't heard that, check out the full time report. And
it was just funny seeing the Orlando fans just kind of sulking out of there. And, you know, it sounds like there were no major incidents, which I'm really glad to hear. And I think Orlando, their security, probably deserves some credit for maintaining order. You know, we were getting heckled at a little, but it was mostly good-natured by the country club ultras that were sitting down below us. You know, I even thought it was cool that the Orlando City supporters, I don't know if it was Ruckus or the Iron Lions or whomever, but around the 40th minute, they actually paid homage to Atlanta United, did a Viking clap. I thought that was really classy.
It was very classy.
Very classy for them to do that. So, you know, maybe we're having kind of a thaw here in this icy relationship between the two supporters.
I don't know. We still got kicked out of the stadium.
Well, that's a story for another day. That is true, though.
It did happen.
We usually don't do this, but with it being Orlando City and just...
Man.
Just the way I saw it, I'd never seen anything like it. That, you know, we were talking off the air that within the fifth minute, it was just like they were melting down on every call that did not go their way. Hey, it's a foul. You know, be a professional. Move on with the match. But they built it up for the fans, like arguing with every call. And then, you know, just to fast forward with the Will Johnson dive and then his reaction that has created some great memes on Reddit, you know, and all over social media. But, like, just arguing on every single call. And then you have Sasha Kljestan pushing his own, you know, and getting in arguments in the 88th minute when they're trying to get the equalizer. Jason, very bizarre. From a team that has won six straight that, you know, we were talking, had a lot of pressure going in this match. And just like you were saying, the mental toughness was not there.
I've never seen anything like it. I can't even say. I mean, I just was coming off the Georgia High School Championships. I didn't see any teams melt down there like that. It was just crazy to see them that early just falling apart and arguing about everything. I thought Alan Kelly did a pretty good job of managing the match. It was, you know, wasn't an easy one to manage because it is a rivalry situation, but he gave Orlando a lot of leeway with a lot of their gesticulations and pointing and screaming and – the Will Johnson one, I mean, maybe it's down to the reaction afterwards. Maybe it's the dive. Who knows? But take your pick. It was an easy call. It's just...
I think they could have gone yellow for simulation, yellow for descent, and then red.
Yeah, we might have needed security getting out if that had happened. That was probably good from Kelly that didn't happen, yeah. But he could have easily. Yeah. And there were multiple other times where you could have seen more yellows. Christian Higuita was kind of lucky to get through the first half. And I saw a ton of people giving Jason Kreis like all this credit at halftime for this big tactical change. It's like for like. It was Higuita coming off because he's on a yellow and he's losing his mind. And it's Uri Rosell who was brought in to be the starter, but Higuita had been outplaying him lately because Rosell came in with a knee injury. There's no tactical change to it. It's just you finally did that because Higuita, you know, blew his top like you expected him to do weeks ago.
I really think, again, we're going to go in and get 3 points. And I think it became apparent to them within 5 minutes that their hands were going to be full.
They figured out they could not get the ball off of Atlanta in the first five. And then you give up the penalty, and it's just downhill from there.
And I also think, and it might have been Kreis, someone probably put it in their heads, you know, they got Mark Geigert on Wednesday. I'm sure conversations were had somewhere between Atlanta and the league. Maybe a film was set. By the way, you see who the VAR is on Sunday?
I did. I posted that.
How does that happen? How does that happen?
I'd love to see Tata's
less than
2 weeks
after. Unbelievable. Anyhow, hopefully it won't matter. But you never know. But no, I think probably someone put it in Orlando's heads, you know, they're probably going to get a few calls here because of what happened on Wednesday. Now, I don't think that's actually what... I thought Alan Kelly did a great job.
It was 12-10 fouls.
Yeah, it was 12-10. The cards were in balance to Orlando, but... That's what, and then Yotun getting himself suspended.
That's the one I had an issue with.
Unbelievably stupid.
That's the one I have an issue with. Now, we talked about this on air. We talked about it. I think we talked about it in a full-time report. Yeah. And we had a long bit on Soccer Down Here about it today. Look, I get Orlando's frustration in that situation when that happened. They were absolutely right to be frustrated with Atlanta and with the referees. Because Nagbe was down behind the play. Atlanta had the ball on the right side of the field. They decided not to play it out. They switched it over to the left. Well, Orlando's backing off.
And not only that, Almiron simulates that he's going
to
play
it out. You get to that point because they played all the way over there. Yeah. And everybody backs off. Almiron looks like he's going to play it out. Then he chips it over the top for Garza. Okay. Then Garza and Johnson, there's a foul. It's on Garza. It's a free kick for Orlando. Orlando should have been able to take that quickly and do whatever they want with it because Atlanta made the decision not to play it out. Gamesmanship, time wasting, whatever you want to call it, that's part of the game. Almiron took a chance. He took a risk. And if Garza goes down and scores, then we definitely would have needed security to get out of there. But
well, we had security to get out of there. It's just
well, you know, might have needed security from the security to get out of there then. But it didn't happen that way. And it was a risky play from Miguel Almiron because it led to what happened with Tito Villalba picking up a yellow. Could have been worse. But it also could have led to a chance for Orlando to break in a 2-1 match. But that's part of the game. Mm-hmm. This is not your U-12 game in the local park. What Miguel did was a little ruthless, a little cutthroat. I kind of like it, to be honest. I kind of like that coming out of Miguel, especially.
Right. I would have liked it if they did it to us.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things where, you know.
Oh, it would drive you nuts.
It would drive you nuts if it happened the other way. I just think their leadership runs too hot.
Yeah,
the whole team runs too hot.
You've got to be smarter in that situation. When that happens, it's 2-1. You're still in the match. Yoshi Otun has to know he's on a yellow. Don't get a stupid yellow like that. If you get a yellow for a foul in the course of the game, okay, fine. You can't pick up the yellow card that now you're going to miss the trip to Toronto for something stupid like that when you know how this works. You would do the same thing because you saw after that, go back and watch the match on replay. Almiron, it's Colman, it's Yotun, it's Villalba. All the South Americans are having this conversation about it. Orlando would probably do the same thing if they had the opportunity. A lot of players would. Mm-hmm. After the game, nobody had a big issue. They're all kind of, you know, cutting up laughing.
Right.
It's everybody gets why the game went the way it did. Don't pick up a yellow there. Right. Yotun can't get that yellow.
It's fine. It's actually the inverse of Vancouver. Remember how there was that melee that kind of broke out at the end of the Vancouver match because there's some really weird stuff that, and Felipe and all that, like right at the end.
A lot of late challenges.
It, you know, we were almost kind of waiting for a dust up as the players were walking off the pitch and there was nothing even close to that. I'll just say it one more time and then I know we're going to move off this. Mm-hmm. Orlando City, their on-field leadership runs too hot. Klishnan's not the right guy to be wearing the armband. Bottom line.
Yeah.
And that might be a Christ thing. That might just be the players they've assembled. That's a team that runs too hot. And they're going to get themselves in trouble again like they did Sunday night. And remember, that was in their home park. Mm-hmm. That's in their home park. Yeah. I mean, what's going to happen here on June the 30th if stuff like that starts going against them? And now you
I think
get
it's
this...
easier for them, to be honest.
Do you really?
I think it's easier for them to be on the road because I think they feel that extra bit of pressure from the fans when they're there. Because, I mean, hey, it's intense. We get that. Yeah. But I think these fans have some expectations at this point that, hey, this is year four. We haven't seen a playoff match in Orlando yet.
Nothing to show for it so far.
We have nothing to show for it. NYC has passed us. Atlanta's passed us. LAFC has passed us. What? And I think there is that level of real pressure coming from that fan base.
And like we were saying, like I was talking to you, I was a little shocked by it. I was like, they didn't sell out the game. I mean, sell out the match. Like I saw empty seats.
It was close. Was close.
Some upper level stuff. I mean, I could read Orlando. Which is not good on that upper
But I'm going to give them a pass on this because we see this at the Bend sometimes, too. They do have areas where people can stand and watch, not in their seats. Yeah. And the weather was lousy. I thought I know some people are going down this road, various places. I would not get on them for attendance. I thought that was a pretty good crowd on Sunday, given the circumstances.
In general, I will because I've seen too many times where it looks empty. But this one, it was loud. It was really intense. So if there were a few people not there, the weather was bad. They could have been in other parts of the stadium. Right. I'll give them that. But overall, it does have to be better. I mean, but the performances have to be better too.
Yeah.
Because if I'm thinking about watching it at home or going, if the team's not performing, you might be a lot more motivated to stay at home. That's something the players and the coaching staff have to change.
And we're going to get to your Facebook questions now. And if you're just joining us, this is a stoppage time presented by Buffalo Wild Wings. Since Buffalo Wild Wings is always open late, you'll enjoy wings in 21 signature sauces and seasonings and great deals on food and beer. Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports,
lemon
guys.
Pepper.
So here's what I'm going to need. I'm going to need a text of the closest Buffalo Wild Wings to Colray Field tonight. Because after the match, I might need to stop at Buffalo Wild Wings for the late night menu.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I need to know where to go.
We ran into some late night menu challenges in Orlando.
We needed a Buffalo Wild Wings.
We were desperately looking for one. Next time.
Let's see. Let's get to the questions here. Let's see. Elliot Beaven says, I heard a rumor that Atlanta's trying to get Falco.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Thoughts, guys?
First off, it is a very random website that's reporting this rumor. That's number one. Two, it doesn't fit the type that Atlanta United's been out to look for. Generally, you're looking at players that have resale value. Falcao at 32 is not going to have any resale value at the end of whatever deal you sign here. The only way it makes any sense is if there's another move that happens to create a roster spot, create a need. Right now, there's no need. If that changes, maybe. And the only way I think it works is when you get into situations where there's a gap in your production line, either a gap in your development pathway from your academy and an ATL UTD2, or a gap in your scouting. You don't feel like you have somebody that you can go get quickly if you make a sale. Because remember, Atlanta has to think in three dimensions here. You're going to have interest in Miguel Almiron. You probably have interest in Joseph Martinez. You probably have interest in three or four other guys. And if the right numbers come in, hey, you might sell. So, okay, if you sell, who steps in? Do you have somebody internally? Do you have somebody in your network that you can go get quickly? Or do you need a stopgap, a 30-year-old, a 32-year-old? Think Carlos Carmona last year, 28, coming in when he did off of an injury at Atalanta in Serie A, and you brought him here, and he was here for a year, and he goes on to greener pastures. If that's the case, if an opening happens, which we haven't heard anything about, and the money's right to bring him in for 18 months, okay, I could be convinced of it. But right now, there's no spot to play him, and you're not going to change his team up. So I think there's a... To me, when in that same rumor you're mentioning interest from Saudi Arabian League, this feels like an agent trying to drive up a bid and create a bidder that might not be there.
Might have been the same thing with the NBA guy. I mean, who's landed nowhere, by the way, other than on the ground here in America because someone flew him over here. I think sometimes we tend to immediately accept rumors as fact, and Bia might be an example of that, where people actually went to the airport to greet him. Not saying that was wrong, by the way, just saying, you know, nothing ever really materialized from that. I get the sense Atlanta United is not a club that's going to make a move just for the sake of making a move.
No, not at all. Right. There's no need to. And if things fall out to where you need to go get him, for 18 months, if he's healthy. I mean, he scored 24 goals in 35 matches in all competitions. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you need him for 18 months, I'd be okay with it. Right now, you don't need him.
Let's see, basically a statement from Brian Wallace. Says, this game, for me, showed how important chemistry is on a team and a stark contrast between Atlanta and Orlando. Atlanta looks like each player would take a bullet for another.
Yep.
Yes. Orlando looked to turn on each other quickly at the first sign of trouble. I love how our team fights for each other.
Yeah. And we saw this in the Vancouver match weeks ago when young guys like Andrew Carleton were jumping in there.
Yeah.
You know, 100%. I think he even wrote about it on 92.9thegame.com. It's very, very obvious that this team likes each other. And I think, again, one of the big reasons why we've had so much of a leap from year one to year two is these guys have been together for 14 months now. You know, they're going to be growing pains when you're only together for 2 months, and we saw that early last season. Chemistry is absolutely the right word. Great call by Brian. Absolutely. This team has it in spades right now.
In soccer, chemistry is maybe more important than in other sports because you don't have stoppages of play. You don't have as much influence from the coach in a match. Players have to figure it out themselves. And when you get into that spot in the 85th minute and you're gassed and you don't feel like you can't run, but you see Miguel Almiron doing it. I got to do it. Miggy's doing it. I can't be left out. I can't leave him. You know, can't let him down.
Right.
And that's how this team is. They feed off of one another. And that's why when people say things about like, well, Joseph Martinez is bad body language, these players don't think that way. They know what Joseph is here to do. They know who he is, and they know he would do whatever it takes. And we saw it late in that match, charging into Amra Tarek, who was about 6-7 inches taller and probably good 30, 40 pounds heavier. Joseph didn't back down. Those little things provide a lift, too.
And we see how, in social media, of how tight-knit these guys
are. Yeah,
you know, it's just great to see. And it was a great call, Brian. Like, you can obviously tell in that match that, you know, the team.
Mate brings the team together.
Yes, Mate. Sean asks, will Johnson be fined for his flop of the year?
I think that all the memes are fine enough for him.
Could be fine for dissent, though. I mean, depending on what was said, and I don't think he made contact with the official.
I couldn't read the lips. I don't know.
He's had a bad year in general.
A little bit.
He's dealing with enough right now. A fine on top of it probably is not necessary.
Looking forward to maybe the Fatheads or something that the fans
have
a bunch of those out for the Orlando match.
That will happen.
But, you know, he brought this on himself.
Oh, yeah.
He did.
You dive, you don't get the call, get up, keep playing.
At that point in the match, too.
Right.
You're down a goal in stoppage time.
He literally ended the match by doing that. He literally ended the match. It's just, you know, you talk about brain farts. Can we say that? Brain farts. Yotun, brain fart. You're going to get yourself suspended. Mm-hmm. Will Johnson, I mean, I'm sure he wasn't expecting fans to litter the pitch after that. Get up and keep playing. You dove. It's clear. It's on video.
Yeah.
The one that I'm still kind of curious about was...
I already know.
Yeah, what happened there? Because now,
that was fascinating.
I'm wondering if there is some kind of context that we haven't seen yet, because Gressel was kind of reacting like something happened. Like maybe there was a brush or a collision or something.
They definitely collided in the first part
like
of
that,
it. Well, they collided in the first part. So they're going for the ball. They both collide. Then maybe they clicked knees. I mean, they didn't like completely run into each other because El Munir was going this way and Gressel was kind of facing this way. So maybe clicked knees. Maybe Gressel reacted
when he jumped up on the Home Before Dark podcast, it's like a shock collar.
Yeah.
They said it went off.
Gressel might have been like, man, maybe I did get hit. Maybe I did something. I don't even know what I did.
It was like three injuries in one jump that he like...
Well,
I
love some of the Orlando fans saying, well, El Munir clearly pulled a hamstring. And, you know, it takes a second to hit you. Well, yeah, it takes a second. He finished the match!
Yeah. He made some pretty long runs late in that match, right, too. So I don't think there was a hamstring issue. No. And last time I pulled my hamstring, I didn't jump into the air and try to break Carl Lewis's long jump record with it. I just fell down, really. I mean,
you bring it on yourself when you do stuff like this.
So you had that dive, you had the Johnson dive, you had Kleschen and El Munir, and I think Kleschen. Well, Mane wanted to yell at everybody. I mean, Mane was getting everybody involved.
Yeah.
All of that, you lose 2-1. Like, what in the world is going on with Orlando that they're losing their mind so much in a close match where if they'd kept their heads, they could have found a point.
Right, and especially after you've won 6 in a row. It's not like they're in a long losing streak or anything like that.
It's not like this eliminated them from playoff competition. No. It's May.
Bizarre.
Yeah. Let's see here. Another question from Sean is, has Robinson earned a starting spot?
Yeah. Whenever he's needed, yep. He is first choice now is not 11 players anymore with Atlanta United. It really depends on the opponent and how you want to proceed. But if you're playing three in the back and Miles Robinson is there available for selection, you're going to pick him. You know, the question is, where does he rank in the pecking order with McCann and Escobar? And that I don't know. But he's playing really well right now, and if those two guys aren't available, it's a no-brainer. You can leave Tito Villalba on the bench and play Miles Robinson and not have a huge drop-off. I would have never guessed that going into the season. I thought it would have taken Robinson longer to get this comfortable.
Let's see. We'll do one or two more, and then we got to get back to the show because I know we're running short on time with that first part of talking about Orlando.
Yeah, we've been going nuts on Orlando. We don't have a whole lot of time left.
But it's fun.
It is fun.
Let's do one more about Parkhurst because big shout-out to him. Sean asks, is Parkhurst the Roger Federer of soccer? He is a brick wall on the back line when we play 3-5-2.
He just cleans everything up, you know? I mean, it was perfect in this one because Robinson took care of Justin Merrim for the most part, except for the rebound. LGP took care of Dom Dwyer to the point that Dom Dwyer is trying to turn into a winger because it's the only place he can find the ball. And Parkhurst just cleaned everything else up. And if either one lost their man, Parkhurst was there. It's just the perfect fit for where Michael Parkhurst is in his career right now.
Let's see. Now let's get back to the second half of the show. Let's quickly, we'll talk about ATL UTD2 and preview New York Red Bulls and get to the Whiteboard Chronicles maybe very quickly. So before that, let's shout out to Stoppage Time is presented by Buffalo Wild Wings. You know, Buffalo Wild Wings is open late night, guys. Grab select domestic draft beers starting at $4. Buffalo Wild Wings Wings Beer Sports.
I'm telling you, that's going to be my post game tonight.
Let's see. Yeah, tonight, ATL UTD2 with you and John Nelson doing the match commentary on ESPN Plus. And if you want to go to the game tonight at the Proving Ground.
Bring a poncho. So it's probably going to be a little wet. You're going to see a lot of young talent. ATL UTD2, goal scorers, average age 19.4 years old, which is just ridiculous. Toronto FC2, really young team. They really look at it almost as an extension of their academy. So lots of young talent, two teams that are both coming in kind of hungry. Toronto's 0-6-2 on the season, been playing much better in the last couple of weeks. Atlanta's been playing better than I think the record shows, and that's what both of these teams are looking at. It's not necessarily results-driven for these two. It's about their play and getting guys ready for the next level. Both teams have seen guys move from the second team to the first team this season. Miles Robinson is a prime example. You're going to see more of that. So, especially for Atlanta with Open Cup coming up, you're going to see all these guys. Because remember, you can call up USL players for that Open Cup match. Mm-hmm. So, this can be an opportunity for a Jack Metcalf, an AJ Cochran, who should be back in the lineup tonight. Other players, Yosef Samuel, I think, is a prime example of guys who are on USL deals who could suit up for the first team in U.S. Open Cup. And they're going to be playing to try to earn that opportunity. The one to watch for me that's on a USL deal that I would love to see mix in with his first team is Jose Carranza, the young 18-year-old that they signed from North Carolina FC from last year. Nearly went to Europe on a European deal, ended up not making it, comes back. He was in D.C. United's academy growing up. Really creative young player. He hasn't played a ton of minutes, but he has, I think, 8 or 9 key passes on the season. He has as many key passes as a lot of regulars. So he's a guy to watch. Carranza is one of my favorites for that group.
And now let's go into the New York Red Bulls preview. before we talk about, you know, the let's get on the whiteboard talking about maybe tactics and maybe possible formations, but I got a question on Reddit that one of our first stoppage times, Jason, that after the New Red Bulls, Jesse Marsh, the manager of Red Bulls, said some things about Atlanta United's play, about them being dirty, and Tatar, the coaching staff, talking to him in Spanish, saying purposely fouling New York Red Bulls. Do you see any...
I think it was worse than that, wasn't it? Marsh, kicking them in the face?
Yeah. Marsh accused of kicking them. And, hey, look, I've been on the bench in Latino leagues and everything, and sometimes when you're saying kick that guy, you're saying foul that guy. Atlanta United last year, when they were playing a pressing system, and you get past the first line of the press, you have to foul. You have to foul. It's smart. It's tactical. If you pick up a yellow, sometimes you will. That's part of the game. A foul is not the end of the world. Cut that and send it to Orlando, because they probably need to see that. It happens. It's part of the match. And from an Atlanta perspective, like, yes, when your press is beaten, you have to foul and stop the play and recover. Mm-hmm. So if the bench is yelling at Carlos Carmona, Jeff Lorenowitz last year, to kick somebody, to foul them, that's tactical and that's smart, and there's nothing wrong with it. Jesse Marsh, I think, is one of the best young managers in the United States. I think he's one of the best managers in Major League Soccer. I wonder sometimes if he plays up to the drama a little bit too much. He did this against NYC last year, where he was trying to get in the referee's head going into the match. He did this one after the Atlanta match last year. He's done some really weird tactical things in big games. The Tyler Adams is a number 10 destroyer that everyone keeps raving about, but it was the second leg in Toronto where you had to win and you're going more defensive to try to do it. It makes no sense to me. The tactical lineup, leaving Kaku on the bench against Chivas in a must-win game at home in CONCACAF Champions League, it makes no sense. Bradley Wright Phillips playing in a supporting role in that match, it makes no sense. Go with what works. Mm-hmm. Stop worrying about everything else and play your match. That's where I feel like he needs to be. And that's why, in my book, when you're talking about next U.S. national team managers, he's not my first, second, or third choice. It's Peter Vermes. It's Greg Vanney. It's Greg Berhalter. Yeah. I think Marsh is next. Out of guys who are American in MLS who I think are most likely to take it. Mm-hmm. We don't know about Tata Martino. Everybody wants to put him up there as a candidate. Maybe. If he won a trophy this year, I'd be a little more open to it.
Yeah. But now let's kind of talk, let's maybe go to the whiteboard here. We got some time, you know, talking about, what do you want to go into about the formations or?
Yeah, let's talk formation. Okay. Tito Villalba, why he's not really fitting into the 3-5-2 as well. And we'll talk about the way Atlanta plays a 3-5-2, because everybody does it a little differently. Defensively and in the second half, for the match in Orlando, it looked kind of like this. So it's more like a 5-4-1 almost defensively. So your wingbacks, Gressel and Garza, sit back really deep. Lorenowitz stays deep. Nagby kind of finds pockets of space here. Barco and Almiron sit deeper behind Martinez. He's really up top by himself. The reason why it's a little bit tougher for Villalba to fit into the 3-5-2 is when you get into these situations, Villalba's not really a number 10. He's not comfortable in here as a central attacking midfielder. Mm-hmm. Barco is. I think Barco is the next great number 10 around the world. I think he can be that guy because of those elements we talked about earlier. Like, he just sees the game on a different level, and he plays like a playmaker. Almiron can play as a playmaker. Tito Villalba is not a playmaker.
Right.
In the 3-5-2, he would be up here in this role. But if Martinez is on the field, it doesn't make sense. I think this is why it's hard for Tito Villalba when the game changes defensively. There's really not a spot for him. Because Barco, as the second forward, he can drop in here and play as a 10 and sit back deeper, and he's comfortable to do it. The other thing that happens in the 3-5-2 is when you do get on the break in this situation, and this is something they try to do, they want to get into the counter, it changes. And it kind of, that's maybe a little generous to where Nagby goes, it can kind of turn into a 5-2-3 or a 5-1-3-1, depending on how you want to put it, where these guys still sit deep, and they'll jump up when the space allows. Larenowitz will sit. Nagbe will go more forward. And Almiron and Barco can flare out and open up on either side of Martinez. That's the other thing that's really hard for opponents to pick up, is when they do that, it's hard to pick up Nagbe, it's hard to pick up Barco and Almiron's movement, and they'll flip-flop, they'll flip sides, it doesn't matter, they'll switch. It gets incredibly fluid, and that's why this formation is really working right now, because it's not the old-school 3-5-2 that you used to see that was pretty rigid. DC United did really well with a 3-5-2 under Peter Novak and then Tom Soane, and it was very rigid in that you had three center backs, two defensive midfielders, three midfielders, and two forwards. It looked a little more like, let's see if I can give it justice. Your wing backs were high in that shape, so it was more like this. So your defensive midfielders had to sit deep because you didn't have the cover here. So when an attack would come down this way, if this guy could drop, fine. Otherwise, this guy would slide out to help. But it was really rigid because they couldn't leave their spots because you didn't have the same cover. It was great when you got into the attacking side because you had five. But you were often found out this way, and teams would just play three up top and get you in 3v3 situations. The way Atlanta plays it with the base of the 3-5-2 that we've talked about, with that defensive look where it turns into, you know, kind of a 5-4-1 in some ways, and then when it can flare out, it opens up into that 5-1-3-1 type of situation. There's so many variables to it. Other teams don't really know how to defend it. And I thought it was interesting on the MLS fantasy conversation that Bobby Warshaw and Matt Doyle were having on MLS Soccer. Warshaw asked the question, how do you defend it? There's not an easy answer. Mm-hmm. That's where it is right now. And some of that's down to Miguel Almiron being almost like unmarkable, because you don't have many people who can run with him, and he's so dynamic, you can't really mark him one-on-one. And if you do figure out, and NYC or NY, New York Red Bulls probably have a guy who can in Tyler Adams, but then you're sacrificing one of your more dynamic players to mark Almiron out, and then it's Barco. Because Barco can then be a true playmaker with a lot of space to just pick things out. So I don't know how you handle it, and with those variations to the 3-5-2, it's really difficult for anybody to figure out that way to deal with Atlanta United right now.
Okay, to wrap up the show, do you see us sticking 3-5-2?
She's working so well. I probably would right now. And if that means Vishalba's coming off the bench, it means Vishalba's coming off the bench.
Hey, what a player to have off the bench.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and the one thing I'll credit Tito with is that you don't hear him vocally outraged at that. I mean, he seems to be very accepting of his role right now, which is a really good, really important thing. You know, this is probably more coincidental than causal, but Atlanta United's 0-2 in the 4-2-3-1. They're 8-0-1 in the 3-5-2. Yeah. I mean,
I think it's a coincidence.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, no, I do too. Yeah. And quite frankly, if Guzan isn't sent off against SKC, we probably aren't even having this discussion right now.
A certain offside goal.
You know what? Anyway. Real quick, we haven't talked about it yet. Real quick, three of the four major calls in the match, Geiger got right. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely got right. The Kansas City second goal, correct, was on by a yard. Zizo kept him on by a yard. The red card on Guzan, absolutely right. Beasler not with a handball in the six-yard box, absolutely right. That angle, by the way, that first angle we saw made it look like clear handball. That was a really goofy angle.
Yeah.
You know, the offside was, in my opinion, wrong. But it's a judgment call.
It's a judgment call. I don't like how VAR was using it. That's my biggest issue with it. If it was called that way on the field, it should have stood. If it was called the other way on the field, it should have stood.
And Geiger being VAR on Sunday, that's unusual for him.
I'll tell you why.
To be in VAR, isn't
he
it?
He will be doing VAR duties at the World Cup in Russia.
So,
because they're not bringing in specialized video assistant referees.
Okay.
Their center referees will rotate. So they'll be a center referee, and they'll do games as VARs as well, which is a lot of MLS referees do that.
Yeah.
You know, we've had Ted Uncle as a VAR. We had Geiger as a VAR once last season.
Okay.
So it does happen. But to do it right now, it's preparation for the summer for him. And it's honestly, the assignment is probably because there was controversy last time he was here. Because he has to handle that. because he's going to have controversy this summer.
And Penzo's the center ref, right?
Yeah, Christopher Penzo's the center.
And we've had him already.
We had Minnesota.
Well, but he got that one
there
right.
There was nothing he missed on that one.
He got LGP absolutely right.
Yeah, he managed that game well. Penzo's one of the more underrated guys in the league, I think.
And his, I think I researched this. The other match was, I think it was Sporting Kansas City last year for the draw. Was
I don't remember anything referee related out of that one
either. So now we're clear on this one.
Yeah.
He's one win.
By the way, you know, for all the Orlando conspiracy theorists about Alan Kelly, Atlanta United had never won a match with Alan Kelly as the center ref until Sunday. So
this is true.
It's one more
thing. Quickly, I know Conji doesn't do it for tradition, but prediction?
Ooh, it's early, not knowing like, you know, who's gonna be there. Man. I think it's gonna be a really fun match. I really like the way New York can play. I think they play a pressing, high-tempo style. It's a lot of fun for people to watch. I wonder how Atlanta's going to approach it. You know, are we going to sit back and absorb pressure and let New York kind of run themselves out early, a little rope-a-dope? Or is Atlanta going to come out at home and try to put, you know, be on the front foot? I think it's a narrow Atlanta win. With a few goals in it, you know, it's like a 2-1 or a 3-2 is probably where I'm feeling.
I'm feeling 3-1. I think it'll be tight 2-1.
I don't think we're giving Red Bulls enough credit right now.
I think it's gonna be 2-1 tight, and then I think we're gonna get a late one to seal it.
I think Kaku is starting to really get comfortable there, and the funny thing is now there's rumors out of New York that Kaku is going to make a switch from he represented Argentina in a U-20 World Cup. He's going to switch his allegiance FIFA-wise with Paraguay. So he might be a teammate of Miguel Almiron here soon. And maybe, because there were some rumors in the offseason about Tito Villalba exploring Paraguayan citizenship to play for Paraguay. So he might have a lot of future teammates on the field. Could be very interesting.
Three of the top goal scorers in MLS will be on the pitch. Martinez, Almiron, Bradley Wright Phillips.
Yeah,
Bradley Wright Phillips has been their all-around this year statistically.
He's been outstanding.
He's been awesome. Yeah. Among the league leaders in assists, among the league leaders in shots taken, very much like all-around. This is not going to – I don't predict scores, but I don't think it's going to be an easy match at all.
Right.
And one that should not be looked past.
Watch out for Daniel Royer, too. He's kind of the secret guy with the Red Bulls. When he's on, they're really tough to deal with.
Yeah.
Austrian. I think played for the Salzburg Red Bulls, didn't
he?
Yeah,
played for Red Bull Salzburg.
Yeah. Let's see, I got a couple of announcements. But before that, thanks to our sponsor, Buffalo Wild Wings. They're our presenting sponsor. And if you hurry up, there's B-Dubs Takeout. Make the safe bet and get the B-Dubs for lunch. Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings Beer Sports. And I think Mena, either she's done it already or she will. She'll post a link for the soccer scarf, a 1990 game. They're on sale. Get them while they are. They're limited edition scarves. 6:30, Five Stripes Countdown, a nice end to game.
Yes.
And then at 6 o'clock on Atlanta United's Facebook and Twitter, you'll have the AT&T Countdown to Kickoff.
So. Right. We'll have the lineup, and we'll take your questions, and we'll tell you where you can watch the match. Yep. It's going to be another nationally televised match on FS1. So if you want the local commentary in English,
Hello. Here
we are. So we'll see you on the radio. And I think we're going to be on Sirius XM again.
I think so.
On Sunday. I'm almost positive of that.
Fantastic. Yeah. And before the match, the tailgating in the Gulch, we're going to be with the Faction tailgate. Good. And I know Jason's going to be there, too, with John Nelson for the Soccer Down Here.
And Jared Smith.
Yeah,
so. The tailgate show will kick off at 4 o'clock, 3 hours before kickoff. And you guys are there.
We're there from 3 to 6.
So we'll do our live tailgate show with Soccer Down Here at 4, lasts about 30 minutes, and then make my way inside and get ready for AT&T Countdown to Kickoff from the perch, the AT&T perch.
Nice. Well, thanks, everybody, for stopping by for Stoppage Time, presented by Buffalo Wild Wings. Jimmy Vance, with Jason Longshore, Mike Conti. Till next week, let's get 3 points this weekend, and we'll talk to you all on Wednesday.